Hey everyone, it's Mary Lou Tyler. This week I have a friend of a friend, Mark from Outreach, who's a friend of mine, introduced me to Tito Bort, who's on the line with us today. Tito is the CEO of Alti Sales, and he's also a jack of all trades, it sounds like, but everything sales. And Mark, my friend, really wanted me to talk to Tito because of this concept of the architecture of the sales organization, what I call the architecture. It's this whole pod versus what we're calling a factory or farming. And Tito wrote this fabulous blog post about the architecture, the setup, and it's changed the lives of so many people in sales and executives that I really wanted Tito to come on the show today to enlighten all of us on when to use what and how things work in terms of setting up the SDR role, the AE role, customer support, if there's any technical liaisons. Like, I was a sales engineer back in the day, so I was part of the team. And really, we want to talk about when you should set these things up, how they should be set up, and at what level, because I'm always interested in the tiers of accounts, because I work more enterprise upmarket. Tito works probably, what, is it correct to say early stage, Tito, that you're more involved in, or do you take it all the way to the older companies too?
I do all the way, actually.
All the way. All right. So without further ado, welcome Tito to the podcast.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure to be here.
And tell us how this all got started, how you made your mark in the world. You were telling me a great story about Mark, so why don't you start there?
Yeah, it's interesting. Mark contacted me after I wrote this blog post that you were talking about, kind of talking about the differences between the pod structure, which has recently become super popular in regards to, you know, kind of like mapping your team and how it's going to grow, your SDR to AE to CSM ratio. And I actually wrote a very thorough argument for doing it the opposite way, doing it kind of like the round robin slash factory model, where I still believe that you should scale proportionally. Your SDR, AE, and CSM teams should definitely be growing, you know, in whichever proportion worked initially to maintain the deal flow. But I still think you should cross-send the leads. So any SDR can book for any AE, and any AE can, you know, close the deal and get it taken care of by any CSM.
So for those of you who are listening, just in case you don't understand these terms, the pod structure, Tito, explain what that is, the architecture of that.
Right. So the pod structure would mean, you know, not in sales, everybody has the sales development reps. And they are, many times in the pod structure, they are also assigned just a territory. So you might have, let's say, a sales development rep who's covering Florida. If he sets up a meeting for an account executive, it would be for the exact same account executive who has the exact same territory. So they're working like a unit. And then if that person closes, then the customer success manager will take over that same account. And those three people, or in whatever proportion you structure that team, is always working together. They're like a unit of work. And then you can scale those units.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And versus the, let's call it the factory model for this telephone call, because I'm sure there's some other term, but tell us about the round robin factory model. How does that look?
Yeah, in the round robin factory model, you know, you wouldn't necessarily use territories to assign, you know, the specific accounts to your team. And it is completely round robin. You can assign it in different ways. One of the things I proposed in a different blog post was actually do it alphabetically, which makes it easier. Because if I go look at HP, for example, I don't necessarily, you know where their headquarters is. And then I go bump into, let's say, Intermedia, another company. It's like, where are the headquarters? So you don't necessarily always know where the HQ is. But if you do it in an alphabetical way, it's very easy to know, you know, like, I own all the accounts that start with A. And then you can do lead routing and all that very quickly and easily and intuitively. Mm-hmm. However, the factory model, what it means is then, like, any SDR will be booking meetings, and then those will be spread out throughout all the account executives. And as the account executives close those deals, those will be spread out across all the customer success managers. And there are, like, specific reasons that you would want to do that. And they have to do with, like, understanding your key performance indicators and really understanding how your reps are performing across, you know, sales development, account executive, and customer success, as well as, you know, preventing your team from kind of like breaking down in case of somebody getting promoted or somebody leaving your company. It eliminates the fragility of the team. Those are two big reasons why you would not want to do a pod structure.
Okay, so let's devil's advocate here. You know, we've been ingrained from everything down to the lonely email to segment, segment, segment. So the pod concept kind of represents segmentation in a way. How does the factory model render when you have, let's take the fictitious company who's selling two or three product scenarios, we call them buying scenarios, which one particular buying scenario, maybe a project-based sale where you go in, there's a defined project, the sales cycle is a little bit shorter, same product, but there's a project in mind at the client, at the prospect. The second scenario would be they're doing some long-term planning. They eventually want to replace their legacy system, for example, with something new, same product, but the sales cycle is longer. We typically like to separate those and segment those to specific SDRs because of the skill set. In the factory model, how does that render? Do you just put everything in a big pot and the next number that comes up is what they call and work on?
Yeah, so that's interesting because the way I think of the factory model is I don't like going to either extreme, right? So when you're saying the pot likes super segmenting, I'll give you this example. Let's say you have these two product lines. Let's imagine you have a big sales team just for, you know, the purpose of understanding the concept. Let's say you have 100 SDRs, 100 AEs, and 100 CSMs that are working, right? Mm-hmm. Because you have two product lines, I wouldn't have everybody call every product or both markets. I would actually separate my team into two different teams. I wouldn't consider my sales team just one team. And after you have two teams, though, I wouldn't say that, like, I'm going to grab one SDR, one AE, and one CSM. Mm-hmm. And make them a unit. And that SDR, every meeting he books, he will be booking for the AE, right? And then every meeting the AE closes will be going to that one CSM. I'd grab those 50, 50, 50 and say, any meeting you 50 guys book in the SDR team can go to any of the 50 account executives. And that is what I am referring to the factory model. Yes, when you have a specific different products, I think you should still segment. And when, you know, Aaron Ross and you talk all about the segmentation of roles, SDR, AE, CSM, I'm all in for that. I think those are fantastic ideas.
Okay. So really, this is sounding, I'm going to age myself here, like the old call center models when we used to have predictive dialers in the call center and we had SDRs. And they basically, the predictive dialer was the one who dictated where they were calling at the time. So geography wasn't as important, but we did segment it by product line. And we also segmented it in some cases by sales cycle, only because the sales conversation that we needed to have to get to a qualified opportunity may have been 3 to 5 calls versus 1 to 2 calls. So we did segment out that way. And that's kind of like by product, but it's really by sales cycle and more complexity that was built into the product. And predictable revenue actually talks about that, which a lot of people either tore out those pages and didn't read it, or I'm not really sure what happened. But, you know, we were talking about this 315 process, where that was a natural split for SDRs even, to have people who qualified during the AWAF, the Are We a Fit call, which was a 15-minute qualification call. And then we had more seasoned SDRs handle the longer calls where they did 1 hour call with the decision maker and then maybe a 2 hour call with the stakeholders. So more of the challenger type model that they talk about with the 3 to 5 stakeholders in each account. But I love the concept of what you're talking about because it's efficient. And tell us about how effective it has been in the clients that you've worked with who had the pod concept and then moved over to the factory model.
Yeah, happy to talk about that. So the interesting thing is when the kind of like pod structure started emerging, even companies like, you know, Outreach, where Mark's at, they start doing a pod without any, you know, necessarily big thinking or reason behind why you should do pod. So they were all selling the same software, Outreach, and then he might have had, let's say, you know, again, 10 SDRs, 10 AEs, 10 CSMs, and it was a one-to-one-to-one structure where every deal was flowing through. And there was no real reason for that. And that creates three problems, right? If you have one great SDR and he's booking more meetings than your worst SDR, which will always happen, then the AE who's getting the meetings from your best SDR has a bigger pipeline. And it's not because, you know, anything he's doing. It's just because the SDR that supports him directly is doing a better job. And then what will happen soon is, oh, that SDR is great. He wants a promotion. He finally gets it. And now your entry-level SDR goes and supports that small unit again. And then that small unit, because they have a new SDR who's training, might be now underperforming. And then your AE who has gone to, initially he was like over quota, like 50% over quota. And now he has a new SDR. Now he needs to split his time and prospect himself. And now he just missed quota. And you're like, what happened? And what happened is you created a straight line of, you know, traffic of deals that is not allowing everybody to take everybody's deals. So the first thing is uneven SQL, kind of like distribution, right? If you were to have all 10 of your SDRs book meetings for all 10 of your AEs, you can much better measure, you know, not only the quantity, but also the quality of those deals, right? Because if one of your units, you have 10, 10, 10, right? If one of your units, like let's say this AE is getting 20% more demos than anybody else, but he's not closing them, you're like, oh my God, my AE needs training. He's getting 20% more demos, but he's not closing those demos. And then when you actually get into the nitty gritty of what's actually happened and you go listen to the calls of the SDRs, you realize that this SDR might not have been qualifying the deal as much. He's been trying to push people a little bit more than anybody else. So even though the AE is getting 20% more demos and his close rate now looks lower, it's not his fault whatsoever. He might be your best AE, but because he's getting all the same deals from this only one SDR who's like pushing people a little bit more than everybody else, now his metrics look really bad.
Right.
So right. When you do the factory model, every AE is taking deals from every SDR, and now the metrics for your close rate for every AE are actually representative of the skill the AE has to close those deals, because it's kind of like a bell curve, right? You are giving everybody a variation of data points left and right, up and down. You're not just like slicing a tiny part of how good the SDR was and sending him over that and just working off of that. So the first thing is kind of like the SQL distribution, just understanding that if you don't run a factory model, the key performance indicators that you are measuring, right? Your contacted to booked percentage for your SDRs, or your, you know, meetings performed to deals closed for your AEs, might not be entirely representative of their skill. And they are also representing what's happened right before they took that, or right after they handed over to the next team.
Plus, like you said, you have a statistically relevant sample because of the fact that you're using a round robin methodology, means that you're looking at a sampling that's a larger size to begin with. Then once you start analyzing that data set, you're able to then drill down to the minute component, which in this case would be the SDR skill set. It could be the list issue. You wouldn't necessarily see these things red flag if you have a smaller sample to work with, because you're not able to really look at the gap and the contrast, as well as if you do have everything set in one bucket that has a statistically relevant sampling of number of records. It sounds just like the call center model back in the 90s that we used to use. You know, it wasn't called farming, but it allowed us to take a universe of records and distribute them across a wider range of data points, which allowed us to really fine tune a lot more about that list itself, you know, the complexity of the list, whether it was getting fatigued. We could also look at the skill sets of the people using the list. And then we could also, from there, look at the geographies, product lines, everything else that we needed to look at in order to, in our case, replenish the list, because we were constantly working from a cold list. And back in the day, you couldn't just go online and pull records down. You had to purchase lists and purchase phone numbers, and you had to be a lot better at analyzing what was working and what wasn't.
Yeah, correct. And I think that the primary reason that so many companies have moved to kind of like the territory and or like pod structure has been because so many companies had, you know, field sales reps. And we've seen this changing over the years, you know, like 10, 15 years ago, you couldn't sell a $100,000 contract over the phone. Now, I've seen that happen multiple times. Six-figure deals being closed over GoToMeeting and just, you know, e-sign it, send it back, and we're all done. And now we require, you know, less people to actually be flying around and be on the field. And it doesn't necessarily make as much sense to have territories if everybody's going to be doing inside sales.
Right, right. So, you know, I'm sure the audience is sitting here thinking, okay, this is sounding really interesting. Where do I start? So can you help us by giving us some characteristics of when it might be a good time to consider putting in a factory type model? Or are you going to tell us that you should do that from the beginning? Help me understand that.
Yeah, I would do it from the beginning. And again, I think the only scenario where you would not start this from day one is if you are really considering doing field sales and you're selling maybe high six-figure deals or seven-figure deals, and you are likely going to need people on the field. But other than that, you know, even when you have one SDR and one AE, I would think that as soon as you hire, you know, your second pair of SDR and AE, I would have them cross book meetings. And I can get slightly more hectic on the calendar because, you know, one reason people advocate for the pod model is if the SDR only has one AE, he can quickly look at the calendar and make it so much easier. There's no scheduling conflicts. But at the same time, you know, all the things that you lose by not, you know, kind of doing the factory model of round robin, I think hurt you much more than kind of like the easiness of booking something on the calendar.
Okay, so let's break it down then into, I guess, tiers of accounts. So mid-market, which is usually inside, upper mid-market, which is usually inside, and some enterprise, which is usually split inside and out. Those are great opportunities for the factory model. If you're in the, if you have field sales reps where you're handshaking with actual belly-to-belly sales reps or actually going to the client site, this may or may not work as well in that environment, correct?
Correct. I mean, I would still have my SDRs, if they're all inside, I would still have them do the whole territory. But then for the AEs, you could assign the AEs specifically to the territory they're going to be covering. And sometimes the CSMs, it's also a good idea to have them cover territories, because for some reason, if there's a conference or if something's going to happen soon and you want to fly somebody over there and meet with their corresponding clients in the area, that would make sense. At the, you know, sales development side, I could still see everything running in a factory model. As long as they, you know, as we said at the beginning, as long as the value proposition is the same for a mid-market and enterprise company, there's no reason to split them down and say, okay, we're going to have a specific team for mid-market and a specific team for enterprise. If the targeting and the messaging and the value prop is exactly the same, I would run the factory model just because the better KPIs, less fragility, and, you know, easier scalability.
Okay. Tell us about the new buzzword, which is the old buzzword of strategic selling, is called account-based selling. How does this, or does it even matter? I mean, I'm hearing that it probably doesn't, but just to set people's minds at ease who have embraced account-based selling methodologies, does the factory model apply and work in those types of environments?
I think so. And, you know, there's a lot of things being said about account-based. And there's, I feel some confusion in the market. You know, some people are saying, you know, the account-based just means reaching a wide variety of people at the other company. Other people say, you know, account-based is actually just going beyond that and having your whole team go reach to their whole team, right? And again, I think the factory model would apply to both of those cases, because even within your CRM, if you set it up correctly, you should have some indication that your team and whatever company you're trying to prospect into has a specific connection or a way where we can get in there in a warmer way. So I would still flag those accounts and still ask my CEO, my president, my head of customer success, or whoever has a connection with the other company to send an email and help me, help my team get into that account. And you can still have somewhat of like a small target account, list that gets cycled through, right? So one SDR for this, let's say month or 6 weeks, you might say, I want to try to get into McKesson and I want to grab, the 12 people that I'm trying to prospect into for McKesson. I'm going to put them into my cadence. I'm going to throw them into, outreach, and I'm going to try that account. But if I don't book it, it's not mine anymore. After those 6 weeks, it's open for anybody who wants to take it. He can grab it and keep prospecting. And it's so important to set up your CRM correctly and be able to, make it easily, make it easy for all your SDRs to understand when's the right time to go after which accounts and what has happened in the past.
Right. And there's a lot of angst over accounts and ownership. And, where in the world I work, AEs are just really wanting to own a core number of accounts that they go after. And they are essentially the owners of those accounts and drive the sales conversations. The SDR is typically in a support role of helping them get in the door. But it's still very prevalent where we see these core accounts in the inner bullseye owned by the AE. And then there's a tier out from that, what we're calling extended universe, that is more of that round robin style that, we're going to put it into a big pot. They're statistically qualified, using the predictable revenue model and the predictable prospecting model of the ideal account profile. The ideal prospect personas are put into this bucket for the extended universe. And then that's utilized in a round robin fashion to try to generate first meetings or get responses back. But there is still some holdout from the AE side of wanting to have those core accounts.
Yes, and just to reiterate here for the audience, right? The idea that I wrote about and I proposed in the factory model doesn't necessarily mean that the AEs will now be thrown any deal anytime. Because like if you have an account executive who just worked at one of your target accounts, and he's like, I want to own that, I think they should still own that. However, I wouldn't tie them to one SDR. I wouldn't have him say, okay, I'm AE Jonathan. I'm going to be working with Cindy, who's my SDR, and she's the one who's just going to be supporting me. The only thing I'm trying to break is that idea of one SDR and one AE working together. If your AE has strong connections into one company and they want to take that account for 2-3 months and say, I know a bunch of people, I want that to be my account, I think you can still run named accounts. I like the idea of named accounts. I like the idea of, specializing roles. What I do not like, and the only thing I'm trying to advocate against, is let's not tie one SDR to one AE. Let's not tie one AE to one CSM or in any proportion. It should be every SDR. If anybody books McKesson and we have this one AE who used to work at McKesson for 20 years and he has a bunch of friends there, we should send it to that one AE, right? And then the next one that they were supposed to take, let's send it to somebody else. Because what we want to do eventually is just maximize the amount of revenue the company can make through leveraging every possible connection we have and every insight into every company while still maintaining our metrics, healthy when it comes to the distribution of who's doing what and what's the reason we're over or underperforming in certain areas.
One last objection that I know people are thinking of, and I've heard this from my clients, is what about the prospects? If we have these different SDR people calling in, there isn't the chance to develop any type of rapport with the SDR. And then the lead gets handed off to the AE and there's a disconnect there. Is that a growing concern issue in your mind, or is it just we need to get better at finessing the handoff? Where do you sit there?
Yeah, I don't think I'm too concerned about that if the handoff is done correctly. And I've seen a lot of companies have their handoff completely broken. Everywhere I go, I really advocate for people to actually rethink about their CRM a lot. This is like one really big thing for me. And I recommend everybody use GridBuddy, which is a product by AppBuddy, a company I've worked extensively with. And it's just fantastic. It gives every sales rep so much visibility over their pipeline. So to give you some idea here, the way we built that team was every SDR would get assigned target accounts for, you know, the month or 6 weeks. They would get those 30 accounts. And now they're the only ones prospecting into those accounts, right? Mm-hmm. So you all are building that rapport. You're not going to get one account being hit by four different, you know, SDRs, right? So they own that account. They only own that account for 6 weeks. And after that, it's not theirs anymore. So this also makes it competitive, right? Otherwise, an SDR, if they don't book the meeting and somebody's like, hey, no, you know what, call me back in 6 months. And this is like a very high value prospect for your company. They're like, oh, yeah, 6 months. They just set themselves a reminder in 6 months and then they call back in 6 months. Here they know that that's not a thing. If somebody tells you, call me back in 6 months, that's not your account anymore. That's going to be somebody else's. So you have to book it in the next 6 weeks. And you should try to get in through a different way or keep being, you know, persistent and always persistent in a nice way, right? So,
yep, like Aaron used to call me, pleasantly persistent.
Pleasantly persistent, correct. And then for those 6 weeks, if they book it, it's completely theirs. They are building the rapport with the whole account, mm-hmm. you know, and there's so many cool things you can do. I try to get the SDRs to always be very creative. I've seen things working from like, you know, the story for my persistence email that is very more popular nowadays than it was before, to like sending pictures of puppies or sending personalized videos with Vidyard. And if you really know that they are a good fit for your product and you are pleasantly persistent, I think you can build a rapport and you can do a great handoff to your AE if you understand how the deal needs to flow.
These are all such great ideas. And, you know, we're introducing scarcity. I love that idea of the, you know, 6 weeks or you're done, you know, it's out of your hands. That, you know, the opportunity appears more valuable. I mean, that's Cialdini's rule of, you know, one of the six principles of persuasion of scarcity, when something appears more valuable because it's less available to you. So I love that idea. How can people reach you if they really want to dive deep? You mentioned a couple of software apps too. I'll make sure that I put all the links to you and your companies on our show notes. But what's the best way, Tito, to get a hold of you?
Yeah, I'm very active on LinkedIn. So if you send me an invite saying, you know, heard you on the podcast, definitely will be glad to connect. And you can also send me an email at just very simple, Tito, T-I-T-O. Nowadays I say it's Tito, like Tito's vodka, so people get the spelling. and it just said at altisales.com, altisales.com.
And I will also, for you guys, put a link to that blog post that turned my friend Mark around. And Mark, you know, Mark does millions of records. He's processing all the time. He's outreach. He's got an app that's allowing us to start conversations with people we don't know in a very systematic and effective way. And he was so excited about me speaking with Tito today because of this, of the concept. And I think we should look at that. We shouldn't just, you know, accept the pod or accept a particular structure. We should really look to start thinking outside the box here, because it is all about revenue and it's all about consistency and scalability. So great ideas, Tito. Thank you so much for your time today. And I look forward to maybe having another conversation down the road to see how some of these things panned out.
Sounds fantastic. Thank you for having me, Mary Lou. And yeah, we'll talk soon.